Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The boundaries for Bears Ears National Monument remain contentious. Tribes and environmental groups are suing the Trump administration for the decision to significantly shrink the size of the monument. Congressional Democrats are pushing to create an even bigger Bears Ears Monument. And in Utah, the new Navajo majority on the San Juan County Commission is rewriting the local government's official position on protecting the area. Stay tuned after the news for more on all of this.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Construction on the Keystone XL pipeline remains on hold as an appeal to the Ninth Circuit plays out. That order came out Friday. The pipeline was stopped late last year when a federal judge put an injunction on the project until the U.S. State Department does more work on the permit. TransCanada had asked that the injunction be lifted while the appeal proceeds. Victoria Wicks has more.
TransCanada has said in court filings that it needs to start building worker camps by March 15th to make the spring construction season. The company asked the Ninth Circuit to issue an interim order lifting the injunction by that date. Environmentalists are celebrating the appeals court's decision. Jackie Prang, a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, plaintiffs in one of the lawsuits filed in Montana federal court.
The pipeline certainly should not be built before TransCanada has all of its permits and when a lower court has found that the State Department violated the law.
Prang says parties will now file briefs over the spring and summer, and the Ninth Circuit will consider the issue after that. TransCanada has issued a written comment saying the company is assessing the decision and considering its options moving forward. Plaintiffs include a number of environmental and indigenous groups. Rosebud Sioux Tribe and Fort Belknap Indian Community are seeking to intervene on just one issue, the legality of the State Department's administrative process. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Despite legal setbacks leading up to the 2018 midterm elections in North Dakota, tribes and voting rights advocates hope they can overturn a state voter ID law they say threatens voting for tribal members. Christine Trudeau has a second part in our series on Native voting rights in North Dakota.
She cooked up a special dinner, so she invited a bunch of people. Manoodle.
Standing Rock Sioux tribal member Terry Yellowfat is a retired teacher, and for our interview, we take shelter on a cold, windy Sunday afternoon in a car parked in front of his house. Terry has lived in this house in Fort Yates, North Dakota, for decades. Most of those years, he's used a post office box as his primary address, until recently, when his tribe issued him a street address for emergency response purposes. But that didn't line up with what state election officials had on file.
The address that, when I look it up, that they're using now belongs to the local liquor store, bar. And I was upset with that because I never drank in my life. And here I am, I'm listed as a liquor store.
The experience prompted Yellowfat to join a lawsuit with the Spirit Lake Tribe, saying the North Dakota law requiring a physical address in order to cast a ballot infringes on their constitutional right to vote. Jacqueline DeLeon, an attorney from the Native American Rights Fund, says even though the Supreme Court would not block the law before the last election, the fact that the law's disproportionate harm to many other Native voters like Yellowfat remains clear.
We still know that there are hundreds of people, potentially thousands of people out there that still don't have an ID. You know, there was a tremendous push this election, but we don't know and are skeptical that if the law remains on the books, people will have IDs going forward in the future.
DeLeon says the surprisingly large number of voter turnout last November was fortunate. But in the end, voters deserve a permanent solution to laws that erect barriers to their basic constitutional right, which is why NARF is continuing their legal challenges.
Everybody was incredibly fired up about turnout. And, you know, there was lines out the door. There were extended hours. And it just showed how many people did not have an ID going into the election.
NARF is confident in their suit moving forward, and Terry Yellowfat remains vigilant looking ahead to the 2020 election.
I am going to step forward again, even if it takes another court case.
I'm Christine Trudeau.
This story is a collaboration with the Solutions Journalism Network and Prairie Public Broadcasting. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Support by PrairieEdge.com, where you'll find a variety of buffalo items like robes, skulls, rattles, and drums. Serving the Native American community for over 36 years, located in Rapid City or online at PrairieEdge.com. Popular.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The Trump administration faces several legal challenges over the president's 2017 proclamation that reduced Bears Ears National Monument to two smaller parcels. Tribes joining the suit include the Navajo Nation, the Hopi Tribe, the Ute Mountain Ute, the Zuni Tribe, and the Ute Indian Tribe. A handful of environmental and tribal organizations have signed onto the lawsuit. In addition, U.S. Representative Ruben Gallego from Arizona, joined by New Mexico Representative Deb Haaland, introduced a bill with 70 co-sponsors to expand the current Trump-era boundaries to the area originally proposed by tribes. And earlier this month, the newly elected San Juan County Commission, with a majority of Navajo commissioners, rescinded an earlier position opposing Barack Obama's National Monument designation. The meeting included heated comments from the audience. Also last week, the U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resource Committee held a hearing on the process in which Bears Ears was shrunk down. And today we'd like to hear from you. What do you think about the fight over Bears Ears National Monument? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us right now from Holbrook, Arizona, is Clark Tenakongva. He is the vice chairman of the Hopi Tribe. It is our pleasure to have Vice Chairman here with us today. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning, Loma. This is Vice Chairman Tenakongva for the Hopi Tribe. And thanks for having me on with Native American Calling again, Tara. And so glad to hear your voice.
Well, thank you for that. And Vice Chairman, last week, the U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resource Committee met. You gave testimony during this. And what would you like to share about what you gave to the committee about the importance of Bears Ears and how the designations have changed?
Well, first of all, you know, Hopi has had this long basically ownership and claim to the area. We call it Hunmuru, which means translate somewhat into the non-Hopi way. Probably would be a bear berm or a hill. That's what we call it. We've never called it Bears Ears. And for the record, that's what Hopi name, the correct Hopi name is for what they now have designated as Bears Ears. But I was up there. There was three of us from tribal members, Vice Chairman Small, Lieutenant Governor Bolketti, and myself from Hopi were there, gave testimony. Each one of us were given approximately 5 minutes to give to the floor of the Senate as far as what we know and consider Bears Ears to be sacred to all Native nations that reside within southwest Four Corner region. And so I gave the Hopi perspective of how Hopi is connected. And we were really dismayed at the point of President Trump undoing the original proclamation, which Mr. Obama did, which was we asked for 1.9, but he gave us 1.35, which is smaller, but yet we were still satisfied because at least it gave some kind of protection. I gave the testimony to the point that the desecration of the area is a total violation of our rights as Hopi and other nations. And what I specified on was that there's still intact three perfect kiva that's over up there. And as you are aware, the Puebloans there in New Mexico, Zuni, and Arizona, which is Hopi, we call that our church. That is something that's very highly significant to us, that we hold very highly, and that we were disappointed that they now, with what Mr. Trump has done, is totally in violation of everyone's rights. You know, if we're talking about religious freedom and rights and so forth. So if they are to be desecrated further or vandalized, then that's wrong. The other part about it, yes, ma'am, go ahead.
And Vice Chairman, in your testimony, you also talked about although that certain tribes are still not there, that it doesn't diminish the sacredness of these places to different tribal nations. Why did you choose to share something like that?
Well, because, you know, in this litigation, there's basically only five tribes, yes, that have filed the litigation against President Trump. But as you are aware, you're from Isleta. Some people are from Laguna, Acum, all these areas, Zia, Jemez, and so forth. They have joined in the group to continue on with the litigation, even out throughout Native American country. They saw the significance of it. They are backing us up, but on paper, they're not there. But as far as their voices, they're all right there with the group of five, which we filed back in 2017.
And so at the beginning of this hearing, it was stated that the purpose was to get to an understanding of how this area was shrunk down. If the decision was made after a conclusion was already reached, and then even challenging the process in who was consulted and who was privy to information before it even went to the public. And so your understanding of what you heard in that hearing, Vice Chairman, what are your thoughts that people are even challenging the process in which this area was shrunk?
In my opinion, and like I say, I'm one opinion out of many millions of people that have concerns over the area, is that it's just another violation or a whole attack on Native nations. They do not care about whose rights they're violating. It's about control. It's about mining. It's about water. And you can name it all the way down. And what it is that's all they were after. It wasn't about, you know, as far as whose history are they preserving. None of that was considered. None of the tribes were considered until, you know, prior to that, it was only the bears, the grassroots people that started expressing the concern, and President Obama heard them, and that's when he declared it as a national monument. Now, on the other hand, on the other side of the House, is that the Republicans are already now, which is the congressman from Utah, Bishop, has already put in legislation to have the three former presidents. You got Bush, you got Clinton, and Obama, wanting them to testify before the House there as far as how they declared other areas as national monuments.
And, you know, something that also came about with this, including Representative Bishop's thoughts and words, and a bill that he's put forward to challenge the Antiquities Act. And that's where a lot of this all comes from, because that's what President or former President Obama used to make the designation. What do you think about this discussion that was also entered into this about we need to rethink the Antiquities Act? Any thoughts on that, Vice Chairman?
For me, it was just a distraction away from the real issue. The crux of the issue is just something, again, wanting to prolong this matter. But for me, I'm just awaiting that day when they decide to take up this case there in D.C. And I hope the way it looks like it, because they have denied it twice to move the case from Washington to the state of Utah, that it stays in Washington. They hear the case of it, the merits of the case there in D.C., and I hope they render a good judgment or opinion on our behalf.
And so, Vice Chairman, to get further understanding about this and even why the lawsuit is going further, what happens when the monument status stays the way it is? What are your concerns?
Well, you know, as you heard in the testimony, in one of my the statements that we as the group three, the three people, the natives that made the statement that if an unfortunate decision is made against us, then we are continuing to go with litigation.
And so if you could sit down with President Trump right now, what would you share with him?
I would share him my history, his history of what I know of America history, and I would gladly invite him out here to Hopi and show him, just like I did with Congressman Curtis, the importance of these kivas and why our homes are still the same way they are. And I taught Mr. Curtis a lot about Hopi history. Yes, we left those places there thousands of years ago, but they're never forgotten. We're not the forgotten people, like as what they say in the history books. We don't know where these people went. Well, I always tell them, go to New Mexico, go to Arizona. You'll see us there. That's where we reside at currently.
And Vice Chairman, any quick thoughts for other Native nations who are speaking up about this, either for or against? Any thoughts on that?
All I ask is for unity. That, you know, yes, everybody needs revenue today in order to survive. But at the same time, do we sacrifice our history for money? That's the big question. And so my opinion on this is, like, we just got done with some ceremonies, and that was my prayers, that hopefully something good will come out of this. We have united as five tribes. There has been no other case or in history where five tribes have united in such manner to support such a good cause. And the biggest one is that never in the Hopi and Navajo tribal history have both tribes united as one to support such a cause.
All right. Thank you for that, Vice Chairman Clark Tenakongva from the Hopi Nation. On the line with us today, we're going to go to break here, but we will keep these phone lines open. We want to hear your thoughts. We are talking about what is known on paper as Bears Ears National Monument. Wherever you stand on this issue, you can give us a call and share your thoughts. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Is the number. What do you think about the designation and where it stands currently? Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848. Graphic design takes personal inspiration and creativity and adds a commercial element. Native designers use their skills to help tell stories for large corporations, small businesses, and nonprofit organizations. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we learn why Native graphic designers are needed and just how they go about the creative process.
Support by the Colorado Small Business Development Center Network, helping existing and new businesses start, grow, and prosper. With no-cost confidential business consulting and low or no-cost training programs, including the Starting Your Business Workshop, Introduction to QuickBooks, and Social Media Marketing Strategies. More information and center locations for the Colorado Small Business Development Center available online at coloradosbdc.org.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about Bears Ears National Monument today. And if you have something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And earlier we heard from Vice Chairman of the Hopi Nation, Clark Tenakongva. And right now we are going to go to White Mesa, Utah to say hello to another guest joining us. We have Suzette Morris. She is the Vice President of the Stewards of San Juan County. And Suzette is Ute Mountain Ute. Thank you for being with us today, Suzette.
Thank you for having me.
And Suzette, you feel differently than what we just heard from Vice Chairman Tenakongva. I want to get your thoughts on where you stand on the designation of Bears Ears, what it was, what it turned into, and what it stands for now. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Okay. I'm not for the monument. I've lived in this area, in the San Juan County area, all my life, and my biggest concern is our allotments that we have just a little, maybe a mile from the monument designation. And since the monument has been designated, we have a lot of people on our allotments. And my biggest concern, and others that share the allotments, our concerns are our cemeteries. I know they talk a lot about desecration, and that's what we don't want. We don't want anybody that's looking for the monument to come. And we've had a lot of foot, people on four-wheelers out there. And these are all privately owned lands that we were given from Congress. And we want to be able to continue that access, and it's just brought a lot of animosity here. I know they talk about unity, but with unity, it all goes back to respect, respecting, having respect for your people. And I know there's a lot of tribes that speak in behalf of their people, but are they really listening to their people? Because majority of the people are not for a monument. I know if you do your research on the monument, it's limited access with a lot of stuff, wood cutting, collecting medicinal herbs, and people have been kicked out of that, of the area. And I think when they really talk about they're doing it for the people, I think they really need to look at our ancestors. Would our ancestors really want to give the land back to the government to manage? I think that's my biggest question is respect, because I know as Native Americans, we've always taken care of the land. We know how to give to the land, and we know that when you give back to the land, that the land will give back to you. And I think a lot of the concern that's going on right now is with money. We don't want no big outdoors company coming in and profiting off of the land, because, I mean, we shouldn't have to profit off the land. We should be able to give back. And I think that's where a lot of my, the reason why I've spoken out against the monument was because I just don't agree with how our elders are being treated when they speak out. They deny translation so that they're not being heard. And I think if it's a good thing, then I think everything should be laid out on the table on the pros and the cons, and let the people decide if it is a good thing to have. Because I know from in the past, a monument has caused a lot of heartbreak for people that have lived in the area. The access is no longer there. And so that's why I've chosen to speak out, and I'm not for the monument.
And Suzette, can you go into more details of just how much damage, in your opinion, has been caused by it being the original designation by former President Obama?
Okay. Well, from the beginning, these meetings that were being held to designate a monument. I know it was a long process, but community members were included in those meetings. And like with myself, I own an allotment, and my father owns an allotment, and we were never included in those meetings because with the expansion of the monument, it's going to go into where our land is. And I know that we might even have to pay to go into our allotment. So, and then people have been digging out where we are. I don't know if because I'm speaking on behalf of the cemetery, if they're looking for that, but it's just created a lot, and they talk about preserving the land, but how are we going to preserve the land when there's going to be millions of people here just curious to see? And I was always taught as a little girl to respect the land and not to go into where the ruins are because that's not my home. So I was always taught that you don't go up to where the ruins are because that was someone's home. So I've always had that knowledge and I've carried it down to my kids. And just like with the pottery, if you see a pottery in the ground, you cover it up because that's not yours to take.
Sure, there's a lot that each community holds true to this area, and I'm glad we're having this discussion. Suzette, I know you got to get going here soon too, but I did want to get your take about the San Juan County Commission with new elected commissioners, some from the Navajo Nation. What do you think about their stance about rescinding, all of this and in support of bringing Bear's Ears back to a larger size? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I attended a county commissioner meeting, and I told them that they speak for the whole San Juan County, not only the Native Americans, but everyone that lives within San Juan County. And I think if they're going to bring unity, because that's one thing that they speak is unity, then they need to be able to have respect for everybody's point of view and everybody's opinion. And the last thing is come down to a compromise where everyone will agree, everyone will be sitting at the table, not just certain people, but everyone welcome. And like I said, everything laid out on all of the pros and the cons of a monument. That way everybody is on the same page because you hear different stuff about how it's going to be protected and you're not going to lose the access. But really when it comes, Obama didn't have the right, or he doesn't have, it has to go in front of Congress. Congress is who makes the decision on how the land is going to be kept. So I think a lot of people are being misinformed. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So I think one thing is the county commissioners, if they are for it, then they need to be able to listen to everybody and be able to compromise.
Okay. And Suzette, finally, there is also talk and what some of the debate and some of the pushback is not wanting to have natural resources extracted from anywhere in this area. What are your thoughts on that? And what happens if under the current designation extraction does happen? Any thoughts?
Okay. Well, my thoughts on that is I know a lot of the five tribes are claiming that that's going to happen within this area, but they need to think about, do they utilize the oil and the gas? Do they profit? Are they profiting off of the oil and the gas? Because I know a lot of them, they're claiming that, but yet they utilize it and they profit from it. Their tribe benefits from it. So how is that different from this area?
All right. Suzette Moritz, thank you very much. Any final comments before you go?
No, I'm just really thankful that you had me on the show so I can be able to voice my opinion.
All right. Thank you for that. And Suzette also did provide testimony at the hearing we were talking about. We're going to go back to that hearing right now. And as we do, if you have thoughts and you're learning more about the push and pull when it comes to this designation of a national monument, what are your thoughts? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Here is Representative Deborah Holland explaining why she is a Laguna Pueblo woman and why she has ties to Bears Ears.
Ms. Morris, thank you so much for your testimony. The panel we had before you, there were several tribal leaders, one from Utah, one from New Mexico, one from Arizona. And I asked the lieutenant governor from Zuni why he felt, being from a tribe in New Mexico, why his voice should be heard on a national monument all the way in Utah. And he stated that for centuries and centuries and centuries, his people had gone on pilgrimages to that area, and that it actually is, and I visited Bears Ears. I went last September before the election, and realized after hiking many, many canyons and spending, you know, 3 days sleeping outside, it was really wonderful, that those are my ancestral homelands. Pueblo people lived in the cliffs there. There's evidence that they grew food. And actually, I could say that the bones of my ancestors are buried in Bears Ears. And so that gives me, even though I live in New Mexico, that gives me a really a very strong, idea that I have a say in it also. And so I realized that because the United States was all Indian land at one time, a lot of us share the same areas that that are under, you know, conversation right now. So I just wanted to let you know that I feel very strongly that I have a say in what happens in Bears Ears because my ancestors were there, as evidence shows that they migrated to the Rio Grande Valley in the late 1200s. And that's where the Pueblo people reside today, with the exception of the Hopi, of course, who also feel very tied to Bears Ears.
What about you? Do you have ties to this area? What are your thoughts? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go to our phone lines to say hello to Davina, who is in Salt Lake City, Utah, tuned in online. Davina, thank you for calling in. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I do live in Salt Lake, but I am originally from San Juan County. Grew up, my ties are to Monument Valley area, and so therefore my connection to Bears Ears is very strongly connected. Hearing Suzette, and I actually know Suzette, I went to high school with her. The thing that I feel that's been very unbalanced is that we have families, we have friends, and these are Native families and friends where there's been a division because, yes, there's not that clarity of what having a monument is and what having a monument is not. Suzette indicated that she's against it. I, for one, am for it. And in the very beginning, when I heard that there was there was going to be a designation of Bears Ears, I was conflicted because there was that possibility I would be against having a monument. But I felt, you know, I need to be well-informed. I need to educate myself in what this means because I know as a young girl, I would travel with my grandfather, who was a hogan builder. We would go up to Bears Ears. We would gather wood for fires. My grandmother was an herbalist, and so we'd also go to Bears Ears for our hunting. And also long ago, my ancestors, when we heard of the news of our people being rounded up during the Long Walk, we fled to Bears Ears. We fled to other parts of the area, but Bears Ears was our place of refuge. And so for me, that is most important and why I felt I needed to be in support of having it designated. But mostly, another thing is that having Bears Ears means that we have that co-management of what that looks like. And I understand Suzette talked about allotments. You know, for me, I have to get a homestead lease if I want a place of residence on my reservation. I just can't say, okay, this is where I'm going to have my home. No, I have to have a homestead lease. And so I understand how important, you know, land is important for us because we want to respect it. We want to take care of it. But having Bears Ears designated means that we are at the table. We can make those decisions and inform the government of what this looks like in protecting Bears Ears.
All right, Davina, thank you for your call. They're out of Salt Lake City, Utah. You can join us, too. Share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And right now, we're going to go to Salt Lake City, Utah to say hello to Gavin Noyes. He is the executive director of Utah Dene Bikea. Welcome to the hour, Gavin.
Good morning, Karen. Thank you for having me on. And it's a great honor to be here with Vice Chairman Tanokomba and Suzette and the listening public.
All right. Thank you for that. Also joining us out of Utah in Blanding is Kevin Madalena, and he is the community outreach coordinator for Utah Dene Bikea and a paleontologist and a geologist. He is from Jemez Pueblo. Kevin, thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning, Tara, and good morning, Gavin, Vice Chairman Tanokomba, and everyone. Good morning.
Well, gentlemen, I'd want to get your take on several things, and including what President Trump's proclamation says about recognizing tribal participation. And I want to get your take on that. Also curious, too, if you had a chance to see some of the hearing last week, your thoughts on things that were shared, and any more important elements that you think surfaced from the discussion challenging the process in which Bears Ears was shrunk. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on all that, as well as how you feel, you know, this issue brings up many different things in our communities that we face in broader areas, including rights to ancestral land. And what happens when there is a split on thoughts when it comes to land. We'll continue with all of this coming up after the break. You can join us, too. What are your thoughts? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What's missing from this conversation? Is there more information that you think people need to know in order to make an informed decision about the designation of Bears Ears, to shrink it, to grow it? Give us a call. Phone lines are open. We look forward to what you'd like to share. All opinions are welcome. Give us a ring at 1-800-996-2848. You are also welcome to tweet us your thoughts, too, at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can leave thoughts directly on our website, too. We look forward to hearing from you.
Support for this program provided by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, the collective spirit and unifying voice of 37 tribal colleges and universities. For over 30 years, AHEC has worked to ensure that tribal sovereignty is recognized and respected, and that tribal colleges and universities are included in this nation's higher education system. Information on a tribal college or university near you at AIHEC.org.
Thank you. You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and our conversation today is about Bears Ears National Monument. President Obama created the monument in 2016, and President Trump reduced the size of the monument in December of 2017. What do you think about that? All opinions are welcome. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. There is still time if you want to get in on the conversation today. We do look forward to your calls. Again, say hello. I'd like to say hello to our guests from Utah, Danae Bekea. On the line, we have Gavin Noyes, Executive Director, as well as Kevin Maldalena, the Community Outreach Coordinator. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. And let's talk a little bit about, you know, thoughts that have come up based on discussions about this and even the process in which Bears Ears was shrunk from the current administration. Let's start there. Gavin, any thoughts?
Yeah, so thank you, Tara. And I think that this has been a great discussion. And I think it's worth going back to the origins of this place. And a lot has been mentioned about how Bears Ears has always, it has always been the ancestral lands of many tribes. And Suzette mentioned her allotted lands. And we're actually coming up on the 100-year anniversary back in 1923, when every member of her community was rounded up and imprisoned in a corral in the town of Blanding and forced to sign those allotment papers, which forced them to give up much of the lands inside of Bears Ears. And that was in 1923. And while they were all imprisoned, the town sent out a posse to kill one of their tribal members, Posey. And nobody was ever prosecuted for that. Tribal members continued to live inside of Bears Ears, but there's a reason why this place has so many culturally intact tribes and why it's so ecologically intact. And that's because Native people have been taking care of it for so long. And so it's really important to recognize that the origins of this proposal, you know, this is an area that's been looted very heavily. And I think in 2009, the largest FBI sting in U.S. history arrested 23 individuals who were continuing to loot grave sites and take sacred objects from this area. And 17 residents of the town of Blanding were arrested in that sting. And Suzette mentioned that that's still going on today in her cemeteries. And so that was really the impetus for local people, local Native people, to get organized and figure out a way to finally protect these lands and bring the resources that are needed to protect those cultural resources.
And Gavin, we're tight on time, and I really want to get to the heart of, you know, this debate and what people are talking about. There's even, consultations going on with the Bureau of Land Management. And then, you know, we have this proclamation on the table that is even, you know, taking a quick look at co-management, and those are all important things too. And before I go to Kevin to talk about some of the significance, anything you want to say on those points?
Yeah, so I think the proclamation, people should read that because it does elevate the relationship of Native people to the Bears Ears landscape as one of the important things to protect. And it also lists gathering of herbs, protection of sacred sites, cultural activities as some of the highest things that deserve protection, and it prohibits mining. And so these are all things that the tribes, which our organization is following, has advocated for and has succeeded in protecting through the Obama proclamation, and much of which has been lost under the Trump proclamation. And so the status of that right now is in question, and Vice Chairman mentioned the litigation that is underway, and we are hoping to get that back, the full acreage, if not expand it. But yeah, I think that the issues at stake are very large, and protecting this area in the right way that is inclusive of all voices. I actually think that there's very wide agreement on how this should be done, but a very large disagreement on who should be the one making the decision.
Sure, that we're hearing a lot on that. And Kevin, I turn it to you. Any thoughts on what was discussed in the hearing as well? There were also moments where they talked about the process of people being informed before things went public, emails that were uncovering certain things. Anything you want to start with about that?
I think first and foremost, we've heard Susan talking about the respect for the land and the cemetery and so forth. The similar to Vice President Tenenkova and Lieutenant Governor Boakate, I'm also a direct descendant coming from Jemez Pueblo. That it's staggering in the amount of people that are still buried in the ancestral structures. Of which the Pueblo people in New Mexico and the Hopi are still unaccounted for, because part of the obligation for the Antiquities Act is that you have to do a survey. Along with the ancestral Pueblo is still buried in there. The Bears Ears is an extraordinary area where the sciences and the traditional and indigenous ancestral lands we all overlap. This is the older dialect of the Toa language from Jemez Pueblo and Pecos. We still have words for the Bears Ears region. The words are Tonda Aki, and that means Mother Earth itself, and Wiwapala as the older word for the cosmos that the Puebloans we all share. And the Bears Ears Mesa itself, that means the place of the bear head. So this region and the monument is absolutely imperative that it will be preserved and the conservation continue on, because we're talking about this is the birthrights of my two daughters back in New Mexico and all the Puebloan children that we have no idea about yet.
And Kevin, take us to your expertise. Are there any specific concerns you have about the archaeological record in Bears Ears?
With archaeology, geology, and paleontology, the agrarian or the farming technology that came out of the Bears Ears is that's where all the corn, the potatoes, all the vegetables were cross pollinated and hybridized to make them pest resistant as the ancestral Puebloans evolved and migrated further south from the emergent areas and right through the Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase. Also, they also kept the meticulous journals and diaries, and where they do note the climate change as well. For our contemporary times, that the tenuous state of this planet's climate era, but that the U.S. military and Pentagon also have expressed concerns, and they are asking what the algorithms and the contemporary data is of the fossil record. So there is a detailed record of the ancestral Puebloans and the fossil record in geology where climate change it will be lost from the fossil fuels and the uranium extraction.
All right. And is it your fear that if it stays the way it is, evidence of this will also be wiped away from people who are using it recreationally?
Yes, there's strict policies for recreational use. There's like no ATVs allowed and so forth. If the Trump administration reduction goes all the way, I'm afraid the non-secular leaders back in New Mexico and Hopi will have these ancestral sites, where the altars are still active, and that the geologic data will be mutilated permanently.
All right.
It's all irreplaceable.
Well, thank you for sharing your concerns. We got time for a caller. I'm going to bring in Joseph, who is in Second Mesa, Arizona, tuned in on KUYI. Joseph, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hello. You know, that whole area, I used to live near Bluff, Utah, and that whole area was heavily used by natives and Anglo people, too, for hunting, gathering wood, gathering plants and herbs, and, you know, other native cultural activities. And that whole area was previously protected by the Federal Antiquities Act and NAGPRA, you know, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and ARPA, the Archaeological Resources Protection Act. The problem has always been there's no enforcement, and so there was a lot of looting that was going on. But now, one of the effects of the National Monument is, like, you know, hundreds of people are visiting, and hundreds of people are roaming around those lands, and there are people who don't know how to respect or take care of ruins, and they don't know about native uses of the area. They don't know about how to respect it and how to leave it alone. And, you know, the problem has always been there's no enforcement. I mean, it's been under the control of the BLM and the Forest Service for, you know, ever since the BLM and Forest Service came into existence. And, you know, what's happening now is it's bringing in all these people. If you go to Bluff, Utah, you know, the most common question is, you know, gee, how do I, where can I go to take a picture of the new national monument? And there are hundreds and hundreds of people going there. And I think that, you know, I can relate to the Navajo woman who was saying how they're worried about they're going to have all these people roaming around up there who don't know how to take care of it, who don't know how to respect it.
And she comes from the Ute Nation, and you know, I think we're hearing, you know, people's thoughts about what would happen if this changes, if it goes back, if it gets bigger. What are some of the things that have happened since it was changed to a smaller designation? And it's really good to have this kind of dialogue, to hear what people are thinking, because it's in the process of, you know, being thought out. And I really appreciate your call, Joseph, on thinking about some of this. I wish I had those numbers in front of me of just how many people have visited the park, and to take a real close look at, you know, what the numbers say, too. But there's a lot to consider here, too. And Gavin, is there anything more that you would like to share about what is going on with the designation or the push to take it back to its original form or even grow it even bigger? Gavin, any thoughts?
Yes, so there are several efforts underway to restore the monument. I think that the caller pointing out the great need for more law enforcement is critical, need for more planning, and I think guidance from the tribes on how does the general public visit with respect. But there are several, there's two bills moving through U.S. Congress right now, one on the Antiquities Act that would establish several monuments in their current size and not allow a president to shrink any additional ones. And it would also restore Bears Ears. There's another that would expand Bears Ears to the 1.9 million acre size. And importantly, that one would restore a lot of the cultural sites that were left out of the 1.3 acre monument or 3 million acre monument, and also would keep some of the unleased uranium in the ground. And uranium has poisoned many of the tribes in the Four Corners region, and some of that uranium is coming from within the Bears Ears landscape and would continue to do so under both scenarios. So that's why there's some efforts to actually designate the original proposal of 1.9 million acres.
All right, thank you for that. And Kevin, as we get ready to wrap, I'm going to read or share some words that came from Representative Rob Bishop during the hearing last week. And he read a statement from Desert News saying, "The further you live from the monument, the more you see it as an abstraction or a concept of sovereignty. The closer you are to it, the more you think the land can and should be used properly." Any thoughts on that? Go ahead, Kevin.
Actually, I absolutely agree with Rob Bishop because the Holy Societies and Hemus Pueblo, they do still make pilgrimages as Vice President Tanikova has stated earlier. So that's why some of the older societies, medicine societies, come out of the Bears Ears region. So I've seen them fast, and I have visited the really rural areas of the land, so which is why I take a stand, and we do absolutely need to conserve the footprints of our ancestors, because it's because our children in the New Mexico villages and Hopi and our siblings with the Ute and the Dene, that's their birthright. So I think he reinforces the idea that the absolutely how it is imperative that we need to protect and conserve the environment and the ancestral structures of the ancestral Puebloans, because my ancestors are still buried there, and it's just out of pure decency to leave them rested and not looted.
All right. You know what? We are out of time, Kevin. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate all the voices that we heard today. And if there's still more you'd like to share, you can put your thoughts on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. You can also visit us on Facebook and Twitter, or you can send an email directly to us, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Thanks again to our guests, Suzette Morris, Vice Chairman Clark Tenakongva, Kevin Mondelena, and also Gavin Noyes. We are back again tomorrow with a conversation with a few graphic designers. We'll learn about their work and what makes good graphic design. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal-relations. Support by Travoy, seeking current Haskell Indian Nations University students for a summer internship in Kansas City, Missouri, in partnership with TEPA. Application deadline is April 23rd at travois.com.
Cache, it's March 26th at the American Diabetes Association Alert Day. Is chico aware that the yante has left to is Medicaid the Medicare akito list at the yante has now? As the Dayu and again at the Medicaid.gov, the Medicare.gov, the Yamist Indian Health Provider to Nashua to look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to not be an itolokinawa. Elakwa.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.